It's the record. I'm Steve Sear. Shimon Dov was a Torah scholar and scribe, descended from Torah scholars, perhaps back to the diaspora. He's the patriarch of the family David Laskin discovered when he began to delve into the history of his family. One branch came to America, founded a company, and thrived. Another branch emigrated to Palestine and, through struggle, helped establish the State of Israel. A third branch almost vanished in the Holocaust, murdered or killed in forced labor camps, concentration camps. But they didn't vanish, because Laskin and his cousins set out to find them and tell their stories. A stack of Yiddish letters and a desire to know more put the writer on the trail of his family and their relationship to the forces that shaped the 20th century. His book is The Family, Three Journeys into the Heart of the 20th Century. Thanks for being here.
You bet. My pleasure.
David Laskin is the author of The Children's Blizzard, a Washington State Book Award winner. He writes for the New York Times, Washington Post. He's tweeting, because you can get a lot of history in 140 characters. Is that what you were saying?
Oh, absolutely. You can try.
Give me an overview of these three branches of your family.
Well, Steve, I think you pretty much said it. You know, growing up, I knew about my branch in the U.S., of course, and probably my most illustrious relative was Idel, as we called her, Ida Rosenthal, the founder of the Maidenform Bra Company. She was a 4'11" chain-smoking immigrant who came here with $5 in her pocket and went on to become a major tycoon and founded and ran one of the largest family corporations in the world. That was branch number one, and my grandfather was her sister. Branch number two, as you said, went to Palestine in the 1920s, and these were wildly idealistic, beautiful pioneer farmers who really went to make the desert bloom. That was their dream, and they lived their dream. Very harsh conditions. They got malaria. They were in very, very desolate landscape, difficult conditions, but they did survive, and they have children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. So that was branch number two. Branch number three, I really didn't hear much about growing up, and those were the ones who were killed in the Holocaust. The Israelis were very close to them, and they were the ones who told me, showed me pictures of little boys in sailor suits and girls with ribbons in their hair who died for no other fault than being Jewish. When I discovered the third branch, that's when I thought, I have to write this. I've got the whole Jewish 20th century in my family tree.
And that's the nut of this.
You have the
Jewish 20th century. You also have, the 20th century.
Right. You know, I like to say this is a book about a Jewish family. This is not a Jewish book. I compare it to, say, Angela's Ashes, a book about a very dysfunctional, very colorful Irish family. But, you know, you didn't have to be Irish to read that book. And some reviewer on Amazon said, you don't have to be Jewish to read The Family. And I really appreciated that comment. This is really a book about all of our families. If you delve, if you look in your family tree, if you go on Ancestry or Family Search, you will find amazing things out about your family, as I have. And maybe not Maidenform. I think that's unique to my family.
You have pictures in here, just to touch on the Maidenform thing.
Yeah.
Who was she?
Okay.
And then, of course, the Maidenform dream campaign.
Right. So my Aunt Idel was basically a visionary and an entrepreneur. Being an immigrant, being a woman, being, a person of her time, a Jewish woman in her day, was not an impediment to her. She came here knowing how to sew. But she was never really a seamstress. She was a born entrepreneur. And, you know, it's interesting going back through the history and through, you know, the things that I found out about the company. She really was forward thinking. She was, you know, I think we think, oh, you know, women in corporations today lean in, so on and so forth. Idel did all that way before anybody else. She was a feminist before feminism was invented. And she basically just took it for granted that she was a boss, that she knew how to do it, and she delivered. She delivered quality. She delivered advertising. She signed off on the Dream campaign, which was very risky in its day. And those ads are gorgeous. I'm going to be showing some slides from those tonight, and they're really stunning.
Well, who were the photographers? Avedon?
Avedon was one of them. I mean, he was probably the most famous, but Irving Penn. I mean, these are works of advertising genius.
She was known as Idel in the family, but the wider world, she was known as Ida.
Ida Rosenthal. You know, it's interesting. All of the relatives changed their names when they came over to the U.S. My grandfather was Shmuel. He became Samuel. His brother was Hirsch. He became Harry. Idyll, even though she was known to the outside world as Ida Rosenthal, in the family, she was always Idyll. And I don't know why. It just, you know, again, was part of the force of nature that was Idyll.
You went to their house in Long Island?
Houses, yeah, on Long Island.
Houses.
Understatement. You know, I remember I was about 7 or 8 years old the first time I went there. I'd never seen a house with a ballroom, a private beach, a spiral staircase down to the sea. And, you know, my jaw was pretty much dropped the entire time. Idyll was not warm and fuzzy. You know, she's a little bit more like a CEO than an aunt. Luckily, though, her husband, William, who also was part of the Maiden Form story and was one of the head designers, was much sweeter, kinder, and more approachable. But they were colorful. They, you know, when Idyll played cards with my grandparents, she had to win. She was just that kind of person.
The Family, Three Journeys into the Heart of the 20th Century by David Laskin. You came to the family because of an email exchange you had with your, what are they, second cousins second once cousin. Removed.
Yes, and yeah, that's right. You got that. Exactly right.
So, but it was, it grabbed you.
Right.
And you get there, and how do you come across these letters?
Okay, so here's the story of the letters. When I first started working on the book, I decided I needed to go to Israel. I'd never been there. I knew I had family there. And I knew that they knew more about the family than anybody else. So I booked passage to Tel Aviv. I took my oldest daughter. We end up in my cousin Benny's house outside of Tel Aviv. And, you know, these were perfect strangers, but family. And we very quickly connected. We very quickly became close. And Benny told me really within a couple of hours of our first meeting that he had 281 family letters. These were letters written to his parents by the relatives who were killed in the Holocaust. Priceless, priceless records, archives for anyone writing a family history. But Benny said, there's a problem. These letters were all written in Yiddish. And I was like, well, don't you know Yiddish? No, they don't speak Yiddish in Israel anymore. They only speak Hebrew. I sadly do not know any Yiddish either. But I was thinking, this is a problem we can solve. And between the two of us, we got all of those letters translated into both Hebrew and English. And they gave amazing, detailed, vivid, and often heartbreaking insights and portraits of these family members who were killed just a few years after writing the letters.
You guys went there and actually found did you find the graves of the older generations?
We found the grave of our common ancestor, which was amazing. I mean, we were in this graveyard in a little town called Rakov, in present-day Belarus. The graveyard was overgrown with weeds and pine trees. Very peaceful, beautiful place. By some miracle, the Nazis had not destroyed it, had left the gravestones intact. There are no more Jews living in Rakov, so these graves really ended in the 1940s. And we wandered around. We had a kind of crude map, and we did find the grave of our common ancestor. And the Israelis, they came prepared. They had steel wool to polish it. They had candles. They had flags. We said the Kaddish, the Hebrew prayer of mourning, and it was very moving.
Did you feel closer to the people that were represented?
Absolutely. You know, this book really brought me very close to not only my living family and my family in Israel, but really to our ancestors. You know, as you mentioned, I'm from a line of scribes, and I really feel that in many ways I'm carrying on the family work. You know, I don't write Torah scrolls the way they did, but I do record the deeds, the events, the heartbreak of the ancestors who came before. And yes, I definitely felt that the generations were bridged in writing this book.
You know, you in writing this book, you said you recognize that history can be told from many perspectives by many families. And in a Palestinian Arab's account, you wrote, your family could well be portrayed as the oppressor.
Right.
So how does that affect the telling of this story and the truths you're looking for?
Well, you know, I think you have to embrace the fact that you're telling it from one point of view. And, you know, at one point I struggled with the idea of, well, maybe I should have a parallel story of a Palestinian family. You know, those people were in the Holy Land when the Zionists arrived. They have stories, too. You know, their stories are every bit as compelling and interesting and heartbreaking as the story I tell in this book. Ultimately, I decided I was best equipped, and most involved in my own story. I thought it would be a little arrogant to tell the story of others, But, you know, as I say in the book, my goal is everybody who reads this book, no matter what background they are, will delve into the stories that they have on their own family tree. Talk to your grandparents. Talk to your parents. You know, find those letters. They're there somewhere, and put it all together. Really, don't wait. That's the message.
Don't wait.
Don't wait.
Yeah, you talk about Saul Bellow. You say Saul Bellow notes this. The generation that went through the Holocaust either didn't tell their stories or we didn't take the time to listen.
Right. And, you know, this is actually quite well established among peoples who have suffered genocide. You know, the initial generations of American slaves or American Indians did not talk about it. In Bosnia, you know, in Rwanda, there was a taboo right after the events, right after the killings. This is well established that there's a shame, there's a sadness, there's a heartbreak that can't be faced. And I think this was definitely true in the Holocaust that the European Jews suffered. It's not that we didn't talk about it. We didn't talk about our family's role in it. And in speaking with other family members and in speaking with other Jewish Americans, I would say this is very common, this inability to face it. And it's really my generation that can face it, that can tell the story.
Of course, it's not just for the people that had tragedies. When you come to a new country, the first generation is trying to remake itself into the image of that country.
Right.
So it's almost the responsibility of their kids to remember where they came from.
Right. You know, I think in many ways this genealogy craze that I definitely succumbed to is a product of, you know, peoples who have been here for a couple generations. Yeah, for sure. My grandparents, it was all about Americanizing, baseball, voting, World Series. But, you know, I'm going back to Belarus and Lithuania to find their roots.
But it's a good thing you have baseball to think about.
Oh, yeah. That's important, too, especially at this time of year.
All right. David Laskin's book is The Family, Three Journeys into the Heart of the 20th Century. It's going to be at Jewish Family Service tonight, 1601 16th Avenue on Capitol Hill at 7. And the proceeds from that going to the Jewish Family Service?
Correct. Yep. Part of the book sales will definitely go to support a very worthy cause. And it's a great organization, and I'm very honored that they allowed me to read there.
And save the letters.
Oh, yeah. Those letters. They're there. We've all got them.
And ask questions. Even if we're young enough to remember things, we should ask questions.
I totally agree, Steve.
Thank you, sir.
My pleasure.
This is The Record.